What will the year ahead hold for you? Futurist Morris Mizalowski here to give you an insight into some of the major trends and innovations that will shape our world. And he's on a holiday on the Gold Coast and decided to pop in and talk to us about the future. Good morning.
Hello. Well, I can't be up here and not come in and say hello.
I know, Morris, and we are very grateful for that. And your family's listening on the radio thinking, he just can't stop working.
I doubt they're listening.
No, that's true. If you're on the Gold Coast holiday, the last thing you're going to be doing is listening to your dad. It's 6 years since the global financial crisis wreaked doom and gloom on the world's economy. Are things looking up this year?
They are. They are. And for a really important reason, we're still going to be financially really in a yuck period. I mean, we're kind of coming off the back of that. All of that still is realistic. There's no magic wand. None of that's really going to change very quickly. It will over time. What's changed, though, is our psychological view of it. I call it building a new sense of normal. What human beings do is there's only so long that we can live in that quagmire of negativity. At some point we say, I know things are bad, I know that we can't adjust it and we can't fix it immediately, but I have to begin to make the best out of it. And this is the year where we've really collectively, on a global sense, started to say that. We know it's not great, we know it's not the way we want it to be, but we have to start moving forward. So I'm beginning to see a lot more positivity around the planet, both in business and in general well-being of people. And yeah, this year should have that pick up.
And a lot of entrepreneurs perhaps changing their careers and finding different ways to make money.
Definitely, and more people interested in being able to invest in some way. So not just investment as in putting it in shares, but in their own business, in their own future. Because now people believe that there might be a tomorrow. And that's a really important thing. When things are bad, we tend not to think as much about tomorrow because today's still really difficult and yesterday's still really close to us. What we're finding now is that a lot more entrepreneurship, a lot more intrapreneurship is happening too. And intrapreneurship is that same model, that same psychology of looking for something great, something different, something possible, but doing it as an employee of a company. So you're actually a paid employee, but with that mindset of not just 9 to 5, which is important in itself, but how can I make a big difference? So those sorts of really positive things, I think, are definitely part of our scaffolding this year.
Crowdfunding, when it comes to achieving your dreams, I keep hearing that, especially in the music-making business, with artists not only crowdfunding for albums but also for tours. Are we seeing more and more of that?
Well, we are, because it's a new phenomenon. It's been around for a couple of years, and certainly it's gaining attraction now. What crowdfunding is the ability for lots and lots of people to put in a little bit of money each towards a collective idea or something that somebody else thinks should come onto the planet. So we're seeing it in bands, we're seeing it in music, we're also seeing it right across business. If you haven't had a look at some of the sites, the biggest one's called Kickstarter.com. That's the granddaddy of them, having said that, only been around a few years. And you'll find there lots and lots of ideas that people think that we have not yet seen or had, but they want to bring about. I always say it's a good thing not just to look at from an investment viewpoint, which is not what we recommend at all, but just to have a really good idea of what people think we still need in our lives. And some of the ideas are really wacky and wild, and some of them are really that aha moment of, well, why haven't we got that yet?
Really? Can you think of one off the top of your head?
There's one that's been going around for a while now, where some whackpot has thought that we need to have fluorescent trees.
Because
now, it actually makes sense, and I say that facetiously, because what they're saying is this, that when you make a tree fluorescent, it actually glows, obviously, and then you don't need streetlights. Now, what they've done is, this is actually a well-pedigreed company, has a lot of money behind it, and has all of the scientific evidence to say that it doesn't harm the tree in any way at all, causes no issue at all. But what they're saying is, in third world countries, in developing countries, in new estates, new places, where there's no infrastructure for electricity, we can actually make that place safe. We can make parks safe for people to walk in, because when it gets dark, the tree begins to shine.
How does it work?
I can't tell you because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's not part of what they're going to tell us. So when we talk about strange stuff, that's something that came out of Kickstarter. And there are lots and lots of those ideas out there.
Do you, when you go on Kickstarter, and I never have, is there some form of insight as to how many people support that idea and whether or not it's getting money?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you go into Kickstarter, what you have there is how much money they're looking for and by when. That's the rules of the game. So they have to tell you what they want and by when and what they're going to do with the money.
Do you remember how much fluorescent trees needed?
I think it was something like $250,000. Again, could be wrong. $250,000, they end up with a couple of million, which is quite normal for something that goes viral. So you can actually end up with much more. What happens on these sites is if you don't reach the total amount of money that you've asked for by the date it's due, everything falls away. Nobody has to pledge anything. No money's transacted at all. So that's what happens around there. But when you go in, your question was, how do you know? What you get are the number of people that have pledged and how much money has been pledged. So it's a constant counter of how many and how much.
Morris Mizalowski, he is a futurist. He's joining me on the program today to talk about 2014 food trends this year. What are we in for?
So what we're going to see is what we started to see in the last few years, and that's communal eating is a really big one this year and next year. Communal eating kind of makes sense. A lot of what we're seeing moving forward is really a reaction to the world we've been in for the last few years. In bad times, when things were bad, we tend to go back to family. We tend to go back to trying to find some solace in the people we know.
Is that code for I'm broke, I need to move back?
Pretty much.
Folks?
Yeah.
Right, got it.
Or I need to sponge off somebody for a free meal. One of those. So, but all that's been happening. And if you think about it, we've started to eat more at home again because it seems like a good thing to do, but as you said, absolutely, it's because it saves a few dollars.
Yes. They encourage you to experiment and make dishes that you'd get at a fine restaurant in your own kitchen.
Yeah. So all of that has led to this new phenomenon, been around for about 6 months or so, but definitely for the next year or two, where we're eating communal plates. So we have tapas, we have big plates put in front of us. We all share from, you know, little bits and pieces, little morsels from a plate. And it is that sense of community again around a dinner plate where we can each try the same food and have that little bit of conversation. That's big. The other one that's riding around, which might not be that huge for Australia because we're kind of used to it, is tea. Tea, the thing that we drink, is becoming popular around the world and has become the must-have drink. So it used to be coffee. Coffee was really big.
Oh, we all went, tea will never overtake coffee,
surely not. In America, it's really become the thing to have. If you want to be trendy and with it, then it's going out for tea. It's not we're going out for coffee because everyone can do coffee. So those sorts of things are popular now, as are all kinds of exotic tea blends to go with it, because you can no longer just have a Darjeeling or an Earl Grey. That's not good enough anymore. Now you have to have something quite exotic.
So tea's back in vogue.
Tea's back in vogue.
Alrighty. Now fashion.
Yeah. So fashion, women's fashion particularly, we've seen that on the catwalks. This is a bit easier to say what's going to be here for this year because we've looked at last year's catwalks. One of the things that you'll have to help me with this, is called peekaboo panels, or strategic transparency as we consultants call it, which basically means that garments have a little panel in it that's not see-through but appears to be. It's flesh-coloured. So that little hint of something seems to be in a lot of the fashion. Optical illusion prints, big, bold patterns, again, as a reaction to where we've been before. If you think about the fashion 2-3, even a year ago, it was kind of grey, kind of black, kind of sombre to suit the mood we're in. People are feeling more buoyant now. They want to feel so they're displaying it on themselves, which is the patterns that we're seeing. And also 50 Shades of Grey, not that movie or that we'll see or the book, which I've not read, but the patterns of grey seem to be in there in all kinds of varying shades. Can't tell you why, have nothing to do with it, but that seems to be what's on the fashion trends this year.
Thank you. I'm always a season behind, so at least I know where I'm heading.
Well, you're good. I'm always about 12 seasons behind.
And just finally, technology. Advances in technology. It seems like the 3D printer, everyone's getting really excited about it, but it seems like it's been around for ever, even though because it's so expensive, it means a lot of people don't have one.
Yeah, so you're right. It's the technology we've talked about for 20, 25 years. It's kind of been on the horizon, kind of been, well, we should get there. What we're seeing now is it's actually becoming commercial. In the States, there is a company called Staples, which is like our Officeworks, huge. They have actually begun to sell 3D printers out of July last year. Amazon has a particular site now where you can buy 3D printers and all the filaments and elements, and eBay has a site called eBay Exact where you can sell 3D printed objects. So we're starting to see it more mainstream. We're also seeing it in medicine, which is fascinating. There's a company last week that said that they're going into production in the next 2 years to print 3D tracheas, the things in our body. We're starting to see livers, hearts, and those sorts of things being talked about. This is not something we can ask for today, but it's in prototype. Great hospitals, really good credentialed, well-meaning people have said that we're within the space of 2 to 10 years, depending, for some of those things to come about. So 3D printing for you and I on the street is something we'll talk more and more about over this year, next year.
It's available, and I don't know at all libraries, but I know at the Helensvale. City Council Library, it's there, you can use it. I think there's a fee attached to it, but you can actually use it. So it's not like we don't have access to 3D printers. Something that just popped into my brain, and I know a couple of weeks ago there were a few stories in the media about it, and that is the future of Facebook. Morris Mizalowski, futurist, what is your bet? How long will Facebook be around?
Okay, now I've said this for quite a while. This is not brand new for me. I think Facebook is losing its purpose for many of us. I think it's going to be around for quite a while, but what it's going to be becomes quite ordinary. It'll become like the white or yellow pages of our lives. The thing that's taken the heat out of it is that the teenagers, the young kids that used to be in it, have left it in droves because, as I usually say, my kids do not want to go out where I go out. So the fact that I'm hanging out, that people of my vintage are hanging out, it makes it less cool.
So that's not new. So where are they going?
Where they're going is to lots and lots of places. So, in fact, they're not going to one central place at all. They're using something called WhatsApp. They're using Snapchat. They're using Facebook still.
I had a mum the other day say that Snapchat worries her because you have no record of the conversation to date. So yes. Someone could be involved in an inappropriate conversation, but you might not know because you're only seeing the sentence that is being said at that moment in time.
So Snapchat is similar to SMS. What it does is, as you said absolutely rightly, is it sends a message and then deletes it within 10, 20 seconds so that it's not there. It's part of what's called an ephemeral conversation. It's becoming really popular. And if you think about it, most conversations are conversations that disappear once we've had them. Online, they haven't. They've stayed around forever. So, yes, that person has a right to be worried about that, but it's not dissimilar, unfortunately, from a bullying situation where what's said can't be repeated. So not good or bad, I'm not saying either side, but it's kind of what we're used to in human conversation. So the answer to your question is that kids, and we increasingly will use all sorts of different spaces, depending on what it is we want to say, who we're saying it to, and what mood we're in.
Maurice Mizalowski, enjoy your time on the Gold Coast.
I shall, as always.
Oh, are you a server?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
What a sight.
20 past 9, 20 past 10 on the Tweed.